Ahoy, you're listening to Diffuse Tap with Kenny Estes and Isla Krem. Today, we're going to be talking about space with the co-founders of Neospace, Kate Lynch and Mike Scardera. We're going to be talking about what impact Elon Musk had on the space economy, the main factors that contribute to the high cost of developing and launching space tech, and how they're driving affordability and space infrastructure. Enjoy. Hello, one and all. Hopefully you had some good chit chats. If this is your first time here, you might be a little confused as to what's going on. So here's what's on tap. This is a weekly event every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Central. Feel free to go ahead and put a calendar invite that's recurring for 10 a.m. Central, because we have done this 201 times in a row. So you can pretty much count it's going to be next week as well. We're going to briefly talk about Diffuse Tap, where you are, and Diffuse Funds, the company putting this on. Then we're going to do a 15-minute fireside chat with Ms. Kate Lynch and Mr. Mike Scardera, followed by two more tap rooms, kind of similar to what you just did, because most of you are here to network. This is a chance for you to meet other alternative investors in small tap rooms of four, five, six people. Kind of rapid fire, gives you a chance to introduce yourself, figure out what's going on, keep your finger on the pulse, all that stuff. But speaking of fingers and pulses, we also want you to learn a little bit, which is why we have folks like the Neospace crew on to share some of their wisdom. If you like the networking portion of this, we do also kind of informal in-person events. The next one is today at 4 in Chicago. So if you're in Chicagoland area and want to come meet people in 3D, definitely don't be shy. I will be there for this one, which is not super common. So hopefully you all can make it down. We also have another event on April 30th, also in Chicago. So if you pop onto our website, you can get the details over there. But that's enough about us. Ms. Lynch, you're at the top of my screen here. So do you want to unmute yourself, tell the good folks a bit about your background, what you're up to over at Neospace, and then pass it to Mike?
Thank you so much for having us speak, Kenny and Isla. So I'm Kate, co-founder and CEO of Neospace. We build modular multi-role spaceships at 1/5 current cost. So I guess, like, since this is a largely crypto crowd, I can appeal to more the thinking about how the future is in sovereignty in space and things like that. So right now, space is very monopolistic. It's ridiculously expensive. It costs about 50 to 100 million per passenger, 15 to 25K per kilogram. And so the focus is, how do we really democratize access to space? How do we let other types of businesses, whether it's fiber optic cables, if you want to 3D print your heart, which is something you can actually do with your tissues and bioprinting in space, and all this stuff microgravity offers, then we dramatically have to drop this cost, and also for other nations to be able to have access to space. So these are the things we're really focused on solving. And so this talk today will be about, why is space so expensive? I've been a deep tech generalist my whole life. I'm very enthusiastic about building technology that enables humans. It's more pro-human and good vibes, I guess you should say. I met a co-founder who's not here several years ago. He became my mentor, Gary Hudson. He actually was one of the inventors of entrepreneurial aerospace before Elon. They were doing reusable launch in the 90s.
Sorry, Elon who?
Senor Musk. Elon Musk. He became my mentor. I met him when I was working on another project. And then a couple years ago, he asked me to take his life's work and be CEO and co-founder of Neospace, and we brought on, and I'll turn it over to Mike so he can introduce himself. Mike is one of the most incredible engineers who's designed, built, and flown every aspect of spacecraft. And obviously, he had this robust history building stuff in the Air Force and then with other entrepreneurial aerospace companies. So he understands BD in space, the space economy, and building spacecraft in a way just like no other. So anyways.
Nice handoff.
Hi, everyone. Yeah, I'm Mike Scardera. As Kate mentioned, I've got over 40 years in the space industry. Neospace's chief technology officer and jack of all trades, as Kate kind of sort of mentioned. I met Gary Hudson back in the 1990s. We were both doing entrepreneurial space launch before it was fashionable. I was working with a company called Pioneer Rocket Plane, which was trying to do a reusable space plane. And Gary was a company called Rotary Rocket Company that he started. And we knew each other then just through, being a small community and running into each other at conferences. So we were friendly competitors. But then when Rotary Rocket closed up shop, we hired Gary for work that we were doing on DARPA and other government programs at the time. So we got to know each other and work together each other. And I ended up working with him on a program called Air Launch in the early 2000s. Which was launching a 1,000 kilogram payload rocket from a C-17. That was another DARPA program. So we got to work each other and know each other pretty well. And we've always wanted to work together, but that only worked out recently when we founded this company together.
Okay, that's great. A lot of experience there with a lot of experience there. So I guess my first question for you, and we'll make it the one that's the topic of the day. Why is space so fucking expensive?
Well, it's a very long answer, but the short answer I'd like to give is there's lots of reasons, but four main ones. The first one is physics, then maybe a little bit of history in there, then government politics, and finally human nature are I would say the major categories of why launch is expensive. I guess I could start out by talking about a little bit of physics at the very simple level. You know, it takes a lot of energy to go 100 miles straight up and then 22,000 miles an hour horizontally. And that's just to get there. Then you have to use even more energy to do something useful. And then you got to get rid of that energy coming back, which costs energy. So basically, it takes a lot of energy, and a lot of energy is expensive. Now, that price is coming down thanks to SpaceX significantly, and with the SpaceX Starship, it'll come down even more.
And can you expand on that a little bit? Why is SpaceX specifically bringing down those costs?
Well, I think that, if we go back to the history, the other part of why space is so expensive has been based on something called cost plus contracts. So this means you are incentivized to overstaff, and you can delay your projects as much as possible. So there was something that changed a little bit with this. One, our co-founder helped develop the COTS program so you could get more private financing. And then they got rid of the cost plus contract SpaceX did. So that way you could have more affordability in how you're building, and it doesn't incentivize building out staff so you can get more government money. I think that was a lot of the detriment. And also the big part is, so reasons that launch didn't succeed before is you didn't have venture capital money, right? So until Elon Musk came in with I've got a few hundred million in the bank, let's go, right? You couldn't get that extra capital to really take your startup to full success. You could do maybe a little bit of investor money and government contracts, but that also was what prohibited the cost. Since he had so much capital to start with, he could really go after it. All the information was already out there. He could just integrate it by having that right amount of money.
Yeah, Kate's mentioning the business reasons, the technical reasons she just mentioned. He did things a little bit cheaper at first. Then he brought in reusability, which has always been known to be a big win in terms of lowering cost. And now he's getting scale with the new Starship, which is a very large launcher, and full reusability versus partial reusability with the Falcon 9. So there's good both business and technical reasons why SpaceX has been very successful.
Gotcha. Bonnie has a question in the chat here. We're talking about SpaceX a lot, but Blue Origin is also another competitor out there. Are they actually making much of an impact on the industry, or is it really SpaceX is the one driving
the show? The honest answer is no. Basically, I think, first of all, they've been very slow to develop their products, very slow to bring them to market, and their expenses seem to be pretty high. I think the biggest mistake they made is, there's located in Seattle, and a large part of their management and personnel base came from Boeing aircraft. And that's not a low-cost way of building aerospace hardware if you're following Boeing or traditional aerospace practices.
The other aspect is most space companies, and this is also the struggle with a lot of startups, don't understand how to do rapid prototyping in the way. So like SpaceX did a form of that helped bring down the cost dramatically. But as you were talking about Boeing, that's really bloat, staff bloat. And when you're thinking about true entrepreneurial aerospace, what an example is, what would take a team of 200, you know, the Mikes and the Garys of the world can do with a team of 20 people. And if 80% of cost in aerospace is the people, then it's really important to understand how to design simple systems, how everything integrates, and to keep these small teams in rapid prototyping and iteration.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Brigitte, I had a question. We're going to totally change topics on you. Can we talk a little bit about the use cases for microgravity? Like, in my mind, people want to get into outer space because we want to, like, mine asteroids, right? So clearly there's a little bit more near-term payoff, and it sounds like you touched on some of them, but can you expand on that? It's interesting.
Yeah, so when we're thinking about space, already, you know, everything you stream on your phone is because of space. You use about 100 space inventions a day, so you're already connected to space, whether you're up there or not. The thing that's prohibiting what's considered this huge gold rush, again, the cost, things people would like to do besides mining, which breaks the limited resources paradigm on Earth. We don't have to destroy our Earth to get the precious resources. But as I touched on in the beginning, microgravity. So there's things that happen only in microgravity, like the how crystalline structures form. So for example, a pharmaceutical company, they did a small test on ISS. The delivery system is way more potent and you capture more of the benefit of the drug when you're in microgravity. There's something called organoids, right? So you can create mini organs to do medical experiments on, but only in microgravity. And the same thing as I had mentioned, if you want to 3D print a replica of your heart with your tissue, it will collapse on Earth, but you can build these in space. Those are more medical. Fiber optic cables, some people are thinking about semiconductors, like how you do the wafers and materials. So there's tons of applications besides, obviously, tourism would be really fun.
Interesting. Okay. That I actually knew very little about any of that. So that's pretty cool. Mike, back over to you. And we kind of prepped on this one a little bit, but we talked a lot about SpaceX. How are you going to beat them on pricing?
Well, the big problem SpaceX has now is they've grown, and they've grown like a big company in a lot of ways. Now, they're still doing a lot of good things, but let's take Starship. You know, I think the NASA SLS program was a $12 billion program, last I recall. Starship is somewhere going to be between $5 to $10 billion program, if not more. Better capability in a lot of ways, so still good. Still going to be a revolution in a lot of ways, but a very steep development cost. You know, they have large staffs now. They're not doing projects with small people. For example, you know, their Dragon team is well over 500 people. You know, we're planning on doing the same kind of capability that has more operational utility for a team of, like Kate mentioned, 20 to 30 people. And that's how we keep the costs lower. You know, I don't think we're smarter. It's just that a national transition of small companies to large companies, particularly following 20th century models, is to just grow things, specialize more, and do matrix management. The Europeans, I think, have a little bit better model that's more of a network model of business growth. And I think that's the approach we would want to take to keep costs low as we grow.
And the other aspect of the affordability is if we're thinking about what is space right now. So if you are a person, right, Kenny wants to go to space, you get a ride for maybe a couple days on Dragon. You might get to hang out in the ISS if you're lucky. But again, this is very short windows. If you are somebody who wants to stay up in space, if you want to do manufacturing or you want to do R&D experiments or tourism, you can't have a long-lived on-orbit mission. You can't have space the way you want it. So with our modular vehicles, we're creating the interiors exactly how you want it, whether it's for your, you know, manufacturing, tourism, R&D, and also our exteriors are modular. So that way you can change out your rendezvous and docking. Right now, you don't get to have a vehicle your own way. And our cost is dramatically cheaper because people can buy or lease our vehicles. And then it's space the way you want it, not like renting a ride on somebody who, you know, has a lot of cost to amortize. This is stuff that we know how to build. We know how to do it correctly because it's not just about SpaceX and the blow. It's also that Mike and Gary have done these types of very small team entrepreneurial aerospace companies before. So it's just a whole different way of thinking. And it's, you do have to train the younger generation on rapid prototyping and systems engineering. A lot of people don't have the mind of a systems engineer, which is absolutely critical for keeping costs down.
That makes a lot of sense. Rapid prototyping you can't do as a big company, and this kind of like niches to riches almost argument about like, here's a very specific use case. We're going to go solve that particular problem and iterate quickly to get there. I guess we'll bring it back to crypto. So Jake has a question. You need to raise a lot of money to do this. That's just a statement. And I know you're not pitching here.
Less than most companies, though.
Fair point. I don't know. Meme coins are pretty hot right now. Raising money in crypto seems relatively easy. So Jake's question is, are you going to do a token launch? Oh, man, that's awesome.
Well, so I know another company has. Meme coins is about riding a specific type of hype. And that actually, so it might be like fun in the crypto world. It might hurt our branding in more, you know, the traditional world. So I would, if I was going to do a meme coin, let's just say, I probably wouldn't attach it to my space company. I would like do a lot of analytics and put a team together of what meme coin is going to be like hypey. But usually meme coins are a pump and dump scheme, which I'm more about like the basic ethics of crypto. So I don't know, like that's probably not my vibe.
You can do security token raises where it's actually like you are just doing it. You're using the crypto marketing buzz, whatever the case may be. And it looks just like a regular fundraise. Just, you know, FYI.
Yeah. Well, with the security, I mean, that's different than a
that's not a meme coin. Right.
Yeah. I don't know if the audience of crypto is big enough, because generally, although I do have crypto people interested, and there's a lot of blockchain use cases in space, they're definitely not, usually if you're really like a Bitcoin whale, you might want to fund projects that feed your success as a Bitcoin whale and help the ecosystem. So I'm not sure it would be as successful. The people that are more interested in our technology tend to be governments or companies that want access to space, or also hard tech investors and deep tech investors that are thinking deeply, more like 10 years out, right?
Right. Okay. I mean, that makes sense. Back to the questions we did talk of a little bit in advance. Mike, where does nuclear come into this as far as an energy source for space, I guess, travel?
For in-space propulsion, it's the only way that you can leapfrog Starship, in my opinion. I think it's essential for interplanetary travel, especially if you want to bring timelines down significantly. And of course, for powering things like moon bases or Mars bases or in-space platforms, it's not essential because you do have solar power, but it is enabling in a lot of ways. And it you know, there's a, in any system development, there's a trade-off of what you want to do that's best. And for energy sources in space, the trade-off is in favor of solar in many cases, but the trade-off can be in favor of nuclear for power production. So I think it's essential for the future. I think it's going to happen. I think the DARPA DRACO program, which is a nuclear thermal propulsion system, you know, if fusion gets perfected, that's a better approach, more efficient and faster and more energetic. So I think the future is bright for nuclear in space. I do not see it as a Earth to orbit launch capability just because people are afraid of that N word. I think it's possible. And I think that could be revolutionary, but I just don't think it's politically viable.
Understood. So necessary in some cases, but yeah, the, as long as it's away from people, I think
nuclear is essential for long-term human development in space. I think that's crucial. It's essential on the ground. I mean, I think as a power generation source, nuclear is important. But you know, I seem to be in the minority even today.
I think there's a changing tide with this, and there's so much development going on that I think, you know, give it a few years. And it seems like some people who are very anti-nuclear, and I'm going to remain out of this politically, but are switching over to the other side if there's safer ways to do it. And I know a lot of inventors that are working on some cool stuff. So I think we'll see some rollouts of safer technology.
Okay. That's exciting. We're out of time. We could do this all day, but we're not going to. So we're going to do a tap room. So here's tap room time. A couple etiquette things. Networking, not pitching. be kind to one another. Maybe stay away from politics. I don't know. Participant list is not going to be publicly disseminated. So if you meet somebody, swap emails, Twitter, I don't know, TikToks, I don't know, whatever you do just to communicate or join the Telegram group. The link is in the chat already. It's a good place to keep abreast of what's going on with the community and Diffuse. Generally in the tap rooms, you introduce yourself for about 30 seconds or so, and then you discuss the topic, should you so choose. And Isla is going to tell you what that topic is right now.
Yeah, and the topic is, what is a space invention that you've thought about, talked about with other people, see on the internet, that you thought was going to be particularly valuable for the rest of humanity, aside from just tourism? What other applications are there? I'll pop you into rooms now, and we'll see you back here in about 10 minutes.
All right. Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back. Kate, you're on the hot seat. So tell us the future. What are you excited for?
How far are we talking about? Well, ideally, there's a lot of technology that my team would like to build. So ideally, we get to build everything that we want to build. Space ceases to be monopolistic. And I get to hang out in space as much as I like. If we're talking about weirder, more fringe technology, I had mentioned in the small breakout room, I'm very interested in exotic vacuum objects and ball lightning and what the implications of that are for gravity, for time, and how you could sort of leapfrog our understanding of physics and gravity by getting, you know, doing a lot more detailed analysis of them. Yeah.
Well, those are two things that I know the words, but I have no idea what those are. So I'm going to be doing some Googling in a little bit. Thank you for that. Mike, over to you. Tell us the future. And please tell me space elevators just around the corner.
Space elevators may be in the future. I personally am not a big believer in them for a lot of different reasons. I think they'll technically be viable at some point. I'm not sure that kind of geoengineering is wise. We'll see. But my view of the future is pretty evolutionary in the sense that, you know, we're already populating most of the, near Earth environment up to geosynchronous space. LEO has gone through, low Earth orbit has gone through a big boom recently, and that'll probably continue. And we're starting to see both government and businesses interested in the Earth-Moon environment. Of course, you have SpaceX that's planning on going to Mars, and they'll probably get there within the next 10 years if Starship gets operational. And with that, the asteroids are easy. So I see if Blue Origin gets off, their rocket and starts doing real things, you know, he's been talking about enabling Gerard P. O'Neill's vision of space colonies, which are basically standalone colonies in space, independent of planets. That's a viable future, which leads to solar power systems for energy independence. I think the future is bright. I think there's a lot of potential, a lot of growth, a lot of resources. I think the idea of the Earth as a closed system should be dead with space development. And I think with limitless resources, we got an incredible future ahead of us. I often give an analogy of England in the 1600s being very much like what the world is today, overcrowded, polluted, resource limited. Are we going to make everyone's lives perfect? No, but we'll certainly raise the tide for everybody. And I think that's a big deal.
Super cool. Message of optimism. I love it. More tap rooms, more networking, and more topics from Isla.
All right. Going back into rooms. And the question is, what is a reason to be scared of all things space, space travel, space exploration, space living, and the above items that team here just mentioned? I'll pop you into rooms and we'll see you back here in about 10 minutes.
All right. Welcome. We're going to do a couple wrap up items and get you out of here right on time. If I can find the slide, there's the speakers. There's up next. Great. First, actually, Kate and Mike, you want to unmute yourself and plug your pluggables. Where do you want people to go after they've heard from you here today or on the podcast?
Well, you're welcome to email either of us. We're in semi-stealth mode, so that means you're not going to find a lot on us. So until we're at first flight, which is about 18 months after we close this round. You will not find a lot online, but feel free to email us. And also, if anyone's going to Space Symposium, we'll be there. Or if you're in LA, always happy to hang out, and you can come by Crypto Mondays. I'm there most Mondays and come chat in person.
Crypto Mondays and running a SpaceX competitor. I love it. Mike, anything you want to plug?
Yeah, I don't have anything else to add other than space is the place for the future. And I think we're going to be a part of that. And it's not just us, it's a complete ecosystem. So crypto, future technologies and biotech, our technologies everywhere are going to be impacted and are going to be impactful to the exploration and development of space. So there's my plug.
Space is the place, he says. I love it. Yes. I hear some confusion in the chat about Kate. Kate is a spy, so she doesn't have a LinkedIn profile or really any online presence whatsoever. So you're not going to have much luck there. Up next, we are doing this every week at 10 a.m. Central. Next week, we're going to be talking about not space, sustainability investments and how that has impact on tax. It's quite different, actually. Diffuse Tap in person today, April 3rd in Chicago. I will be there. It's from, I believe, 4 to 7, but the details you can find on the old website, which is under my face. Telegram, join it, say hello. We'll put notifications of whatever's going on in Diffuse, and the community is obviously welcome to do the same. Thank you, Kate. Thank you, Mike, for coming out and sharing some of your really interesting experience with the community. And thank you, everybody, for showing up.
And one tiny thing, we'll be hosting a Diffuse Tap at Crypto Mondays in June.
Yes.
Yeah.
Nice.
LA, love it. We will
Thanks
have
so much.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you for coming out.
We'll see you, everybody.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Bye.
That's all, folks. Hope you learned something new. If you join us on Zoom every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Central, you can also network with other fascinating alternative investors from all over the world in small groups of 4 or 5. Learn more on our website at www.diffusefunds.com. Until next time.